Welcome to Edu Leadership Radio. I'm your host, Justin Bader, and my goal with each episode is to bring you the best in professional practice for school leaders. Mary Miller is president and founder of Miller Guidance Solutions. She's worked in public schools for 34 years and now supports schools through her work with teachers, principals, and district administrators as a school reform leader. So Mary, you've previously worked as a school psychologist and RTI coordinator in your work in public schools. What prompted you to make a change and take on the work that you're doing now?
Well, I saw firsthand the frustrations of the traditional system in which the only way to provide extra support for students seemed to be through special education. As a school psychologist, I was kind of stuck in the middle. On the one side were teachers who were working very hard with children who were struggling, trying all the things they had in their bag of tricks. And the only option that they had was to ask for special education services. On the other side, I would be working with children who I knew only needed some specialized support or help for a period of time and were not truly considered disabled. So that was a very frustrating place to be in, because I felt teachers deserved the help for their students, but felt it was wrong to label students as special education when they really just needed extra help. So when the school reform movement came to Illinois in around 2000, I was ready to try and find a better way. So Illinois won a five-year federal grant to implement RTI, and I was lucky enough to be one of the people in Illinois who worked to define the critical components of RTI. And so we worked to try to quantify it. And then as I was doing that, I was working full-time in several different school districts. One was a high-performing district, and then I moved to a lower performing district. And in both places, I was taking these theoretical concepts and coming back and trying to put them in place. And it got to the point that people would say to me, okay, I get it. I understand what you're saying. Now, how are we supposed to do database-based decision-making? How do we do a multi-tiered system of support? So the theory wasn't enough. We needed to quantify it, make it real for teachers and principals in schools. So I started writing a manual, a how-to manual for putting these things into place. And it was kind of like I had a little laboratory where I would try things with teachers and principals and refine it along the way. I continued my work with the state grant. And through that, others learned of what I was doing in the school districts that I had been employed with. And they asked if I could come and help them set things up in their district. Well, working full-time and 5 days a week, I really didn't have the time to do that. So there really wasn't time to spread that around. So I went and started a company in 2009 so that I could take what I had learned from working in the schools to other places.
So take me back to those early days of RTI in Illinois. What were some of the first changes that you saw really start to take place in schools when you felt like you're really starting to get traction?
Well, it was a long time before we got traction. There was a dedicated, small but dedicated group of professionals who were working for it. When it started to get traction is when special ed funds were allowed to be allocated 15% of your special ed budget. Part B of the special ed idea was able to be used for preventative activities.
Oh, that's huge.
That's huge. And when that occurred, then districts began to look into trying different things. We have some very talented people here in the Chicago area, and the universal screening, the idea of a universal screening in reading and math, spelling, writing, mm-hmm. and even in behavior, was one of the first things to grab hold. And so that was put into place. But of course, then there was no process for how to use or understand that data. But that was one of our first successes.
So a phrase that I hear often when we're talking about RTI and about making shifts away from more traditional special ed classification processes is this idea of waiting for students to fail. And mm-hmm. did you see that was taking place and that was something that that was addressed in this shift?
Oh, absolutely. That was occurring. And that's the frustration that teachers were having. The idea of a potential achievement discrepancy, which is what Illinois used for determining eligibility for learning disabilities support, it was a flawed concept to begin with, because young children could not be discrepant enough, if that makes
right.
sense, from their ability to meet the requirements. So it was usually around late second grade or third grade before the achievement gap was wide enough to qualify them. And the whole thing, when you say it out loud, seems somewhat silly, that we didn't see this before. But the idea of being able to monitor the performance of all students in your population, identify in a timely fashion those that need extra support, and identify what that extra support is, and then provide it to them, and then monitor how that is affecting them, and make these decisions based on data, has revolutionized education in the systems that I work with.
Right. So rather than wait 3 or 4 years for a big discrepancy to develop, that universal screening catches some of those small discrepancies early, and
right.
then the idea is they can be addressed quickly.
Shore them up, and get them back to the ideas for all students.
Great.
This isn't for any particular group of students, but for all students, to give them what they need so that they can receive their education in the core program.
Great. Now, when we talk about data collection, I think, you know, most schools collect quite a bit of data, and I'm always hesitant to advocate for collecting more data if it's not going to be used. What do you find to be the status quo about data collection in most schools or most districts? You know, do they collect data? Is it the right data? And then what kinds of changes to that data collection do you typically end up recommending?
Well, districts have a lot of data. They, as you say, they collect a lot of data, but a lot of it remains in the shrink wrap on the principal's desk. Mm-hmm. And doesn't get opened or used because there isn't a process for using it. That's one of the things that we see often. There's really three things. That's one of them, is that there is data, good data, but there's no process for using it, and so it doesn't get used. The second thing is that we spend a good portion of time, when we begin our work with the district, having administrators understand the differences in types of data, program evaluation versus universal screening versus progress monitoring. And what I see continually is that data is being used for the wrong purpose. Hmm. We would have an example of that would be in Illinois, the ISAT test is the state exam, the Illinois Standards Assessment Test. And that is often used to determine which students would receive extra support. Now, that's a summative evaluation that is meant to evaluate programs, not to identify student need.
Right.
So that's a misuse. Also, we would see diagnostic tests being used for universal screening. A universal screening tool is best if it's brief and inexpensive, because it's universal. You're testing everybody. And so if you use a diagnostic tool, which is maybe 45 minutes to an hour per student, the resources of a district are just being eaten up. And you're collecting a lot of data that you don't really need on students who aren't showing risk. So that's the other thing we see, is assessments being misused. And the third thing is that for teachers and principals, the most useful data is that data that's closest to what really counts, which is the teacher-student relationship. And for teachers, when they look at ISATs, that's pretty remote. That doesn't really tell them about what they're doing in the classroom. Even some of our diagnostic tests, it doesn't really tell them what they need to know to adjust instruction to meet the needs of their students. So, and there's a really big lack of data in that particular realm. So what we do is we come in and we help them to create what we call as our assessment hierarchy, so that there are data sources at all the levels that there need to be, and particularly at the classroom level for teachers to use. And then the instruments that are being used for other purposes are instruments that are reliable and valid for that particular purpose. Hmm. It really streamlines the assessment process. It is not an easy process, because assessments often have to be moved around or discontinued altogether, or gaps filled in. But it is probably the most important change that we see.
Now, when you talk about looking at the system of assessments that are used, and making sure that there are no gaps and there are no redundancies, and making sure that each kind of data is used for the right purpose, That seems like a world that is a little bit different from the world I'm used to, because I can think of lots of assessments that you know that I recall implementing in some way, and usually the reason that we used that assessment was because we bought some software or we bought a curriculum, and that was kind of what came with it. You're talking about looking at the whole picture and saying, what do we need for diagnostic purposes? What do we need for universal screening? What do we need for the kind of accountability and program monitoring purposes? That sounds like a very different approach.
It truly is. And it is an approach that is difficult for districts to grasp, because what we're advocating is something that has the biggest impact on the system, which is to organize all the pieces into a coordinated whole that is with the student learning as the focus of it. So what we do with Miller Guidance is to do a complete blueprint analysis of what a district has in place, all the pieces that they've already purchased, and then look at it through the lens of this comprehensive methodology that is the Miller Guidance system. And the methodology is based on best practices research and was written to incorporate all of that theory and theoretical RTI basis that we were learning and was best practice from the research world. And so actual tasks, actual actions that are in place in schools are demonstrating the research that is backing it up. I think teachers get tired, principals too, I would imagine, get tired of hearing about theory. They want to know, give me a way of putting this into practice. And so that's what we've done. But it is written, the methodology is written with the research behind it. So it is, we have a methodology. So we work through standardized questions for all of the districts that we work with. And I think one of the characteristics of the Miller Guidance system that is most useful is that it's replicable. Because it is a blueprint, it can be applied to any district, whether it's urban, rural, suburban, large, small, diverse. We have clients of in all of those categories. The blueprint is the same. How the blueprint plays out is unique in each one of those situations for several reasons. One, in that they come into it with different capabilities. Each district, most of the districts I've worked with have tried to do some things to meet the federal requirements and the initiatives. So we want to honor those things. We keep those in place. And the other reason it's unique is because they put their own stamp on it. The decisions they make about the assessments are different. The decisions they make about the core philosophy of reading and what is going to be their main program and how are they going to transmit that to the schools and communicate that to teachers in the classrooms. Mm-hmm. All of those things are unique, but the questions, the blueprint remains the same.
Great. I love something you said a little bit ago about, identifying some things to stop doing. And it seems like we almost never do that in education. We only start things. We never stop doing them. So I think that streamlining process that you're talking about and kind of aligning the data that you're collecting with those various purposes and kind of organizing that into a blueprint is a great idea. Now, let's talk about protocols for a second. You mentioned protocols for looking at data and acting on it. Now, I've used protocols in a lot of different settings as a teacher and as a principal, and I found that sometimes they can be helpful. Sometimes people feel like they get in the way because we already know what we're supposed to be talking about, and the protocol just feels like another person in the room who's interfering. What does it take for a protocol to really work well, and what does that look like?
Well, to have the protocols that Miller Guidance uses are written, the protocols are the embodiment of all those decisions that we just talked about, the decisions that are made at the upper administrative level about which assessments are going to be used, what cut scores are going to be used in those assessments. all of that then is embodied in these protocols. So it is the vehicle that communicates district policy to the schools. One benefit of that, of course, is that all of the schools are on the same page and are using the, so if you have a district with 9 elementary schools, what is considered risk is the same. And what is considered progress and time to change an intervention is the same. So the protocols serve the purpose of standardizing that across schools and also communicating it from the upper administration to the school and classroom level. That's where principals are absolutely the cornerstone of the system, because they are the connector between upper administration and the buildings. That is both a blessing and a curse, I'm sure, from the perspective of a principal. The protocols give you the structure by which you can make sure that what you're doing is communicating district policy, but also best practice. And through the use of the protocols, what we consider this to be is that we're scaffolding the learning for teachers rather than sending them to workshops about data-driven decision-making. They're learning it, but they don't know that they're learning it. You know, they're going through a process, and in the process, their attitudes and beliefs change, and you really end up with cultural change. Now, the protocols that Miller Guidance System uses are written according to grade level and according to the time of year. So it's not the same protocol for each grade level each time of year, because they are dependent upon the data sources that are available. So in the fall, what you have available to you to look at is different than what you have to look at in the spring, winter, or spring. So they are very, very unique to that. We have different types of data teams. We have data analysis, which takes into account the universal screening and diagnostic data. And then we have data review, at which time we review the progress on the plans that were made. Great. So the protocols are very unique in that way.
So you talked about the idea of making some important decisions at the district level and then kind of encoding those policies into the protocols. And I want to step back for a minute and look at this idea of district policy. And I think for superintendents, it's probably pretty obvious that when you have big differences between or big differences from school to school in terms of what counts as meeting standard or what counts as in need of more support, that's an equity problem when those differences are pretty apparent between schools. From the classroom perspective, I think the phrase district policy does not always have the same kind of positive connotations that it does just in terms of bringing about equity, and to classroom teachers, I think district policy is often kind of an explanation for why we have to do this terrible thing that somebody's making us do that's a distraction from our real job. And of course, principals are kind of caught in the middle of sharing those goals of equity and alignment as a system, but also dealing with the very large differences on the front line of what classroom practice looks like and what school level practice looks like. How do you bring all that together, and what does it take to get everyone on the same team?
It takes a lot of resolve, I guess, but it starts with leadership, and you can't underestimate the importance of this. When a district decides that what they want to do is to make real improvement, the kind of change that the Miller Guidance System brings upon a school and a district is the kind of change that is long lasting. And what it does is make all of the pieces that you have in place work together for the benefit of students. So when a district decides to do that, and we've done a gap analysis to find out what they've got going and what they need, the first 6 to 12 months is spent with the upper administration only in monthly, bi-monthly meetings, at which time we go through some very difficult discussions. I really wish I had some of these on tape, because it is the place where the philosophy of the district is really called into the light, and districts are asked to think critically, and only visionary leadership is able to do that. And that's where it becomes so important in the school reform movement, that the leadership acknowledges that the importance of a system. We've seen so much in school reform where the pieces are brought in and buying, as you said earlier, you know, a data management system or a instructional technology, and it lands on an antiquated system and isn't able to be as useful. So it's really important for the leadership to get on board. And then we make all those hard decisions. We talk about, you know, what is your philosophy of literacy? There are lots of different philosophies out there. And in the schools, there are lots of different ways that reading is being taught. And that can be at the same grade level.
Absolutely. And in the same school.
At the same school. I've been in schools where, take, for example, a second grade, and the district adopted a well-researched reading curriculum and brought it on into the district. And one second grade teacher uses it, follows the teacher's manual, and teaches it according to the way it's supposed to be. And the next second grade classroom, it's still in the shrink wrap.
Yeah. And then the next one has the curriculum that we were supposed to throw away 10 years ago.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
And those are fundamental questions. And I don't care if you're in school reform, you have to answer those questions, because if you bring in a technology, it's not going to solve that. Mm-hmm. So the visionary leaders are the ones to be able to understand why that's important. Why do we have to call that into question? And then what are the actions to be taken?
Yeah, starts with leadership,
and, right?
Yeah, and flows from there. So,
answer the rest of your question. Mm-hmm. So the way that it flows then is once those decisions have all been made and documented, policies written, white papers, then they've bought the new assessments. You know, all of that infrastructure is in place. The data teams. And when I say data teams, I'd like to clarify that a little bit. I think our data teams, you could call them professional learning communities. You could call them teacher collaborations. It is the place where teachers come together as a grade level and work on how to meet the needs of all their students at the grade level. And it's facilitated by principals who are the instructional leaders and lead this. So data teams, I think I've been in buildings where they say, we do our PLTs on Wednesday morning, and then we do our data teams every other month. Well, you know, we have so many initiatives going that overlap or compete. What the Miller guidance system does is bring that all together. The data teams have the characteristics of a PLC. Mm-hmm. And collaborative program evaluation for teachers. So then what we do is we bring in the principals, make sure they understand all of the district decisions if they haven't been in on them already. That is, you know, dependent on the district. But the principals then understand and question and fine-tune all of these decisions made at the district level. And then we start a program that's called the School Ambassador Program, where the principals would choose two or three teachers, staff members from their building that they felt would be positive leaders for this process. And we spend the next 6 months working with them to understand the data team process. And then we roll it out.
So you're actually bringing in teachers
from the
very early stages of the rollout. So once the kind of big picture blueprint is right. mapped out, you immediately start getting teachers right. on board and involving right. them in the implementation, right?
Right, and teacher leaders who would be good spokespersons for this process.
Right, because I think a huge piece of any change initiative is helping people understand not just what's new and different, but what resonates with things we already believed and things we already maybe thought we were doing well, you know, but have some room to improve on. And mm-hmm. and when you talked about combining PLCs and data teams or kind of making those part of the same process, that struck a chord with me because we had the same experience where, you know, okay, we have grade level team meetings and those are, say, every other week. And then somebody says we have to do data teams and we have a training and then we start doing data teams. And mm-hmm. and pretty soon our best teams of teachers start to say, hey, you know, we can actually talk about these things together. Our PLC and our grade level team and our data team, those are really all the same thing because we're really all working toward the same, you know, right. the same goals of helping our students learn and planning our curriculum, you know, and these can all really fit together.
Right.
And that's a neat thing to happen when you see teacher leaders, you know, understanding the district vision, but also trusting their own expertise with their students and seeing how those two pieces can fit together. I think those teacher leaders can be some of the best people to be in charge of these rollouts.
Right. And they definitely are. One of the challenges that we have is that when we roll this out, the teachers own these grade level teams. Mm-hmm. But grade teachers generally aren't used to that. When they come to team meetings, it's usually been in the special ed context or a student assistant team or whatever they were called through the course of the year, where they would come and a group of people would tell them what was going on with their students or their student and then prescribe a program. So we're flipping this on teachers. They come, the data is prepared for them, at least at first. We hope eventually to put the data in their hands, but it's prepared for them so that it represents reliable and valid information. And then they are left to interpret it mm-hmm. and draw conclusions. Of course, the principal is the instructional leader there. In that process, Justin, what happens is teachers realize where their gaps are in their knowledge and in their skill base, as do principals.
So it ties right back into professional development then.
Absolutely. And they then, and in the systems, one of the decisions made at the district level is how to give principals the ability to plan and fund professional development at a building level. Mm-hmm. So when your teachers decide what they need as professional development, you as a principal can provide that for them. Great. And then the next level up is that the district administration listens to what principals need based on this, all tied into this process, and provide it to them.
Great. So let's say you go through the whole process, the whole Miller guidance system with a district, and let's say you come back 2 years later. What do you hope to see in a school? Let's say you visit a school and meet with a principal that you worked with 2 years ago and went through the whole process. What do you hope is taking place in that school, and what do you hope that principal is doing 2 years out?
Well, I hope that, you know, we create systems that are focused on continuous learning. Continuous learning about how they can always improve student performance. So I would hope that the shell of the system was there, but it wouldn't be the same because it has to continue to grow and adapt to the environment in which you work. Mm-hmm. And I think the Miller Guidance System works that in and expects that people to think critically about the information in front of them and innovate according to how they can always work best. What Miller Guidance achieves is that paradigm shift in which traditional systems the focus seems to be on systemic processes rather than on student performance. Mm-hmm. And when we have finished our work with a system, the bottom line is student performance. And I would hope that I would see when I returned that was still there, but that it had grown and continued to adapt to make it even better.
So based on all of your experience, both working at the system level and working at the school level, as you spent 34 years in public schools as a school psychologist and RTI coordinator, for individual principals who might find themselves kind of on their own in bringing about this kind of alignment, maybe there's not any big district thing underway, what do you consider a great first step into aligning some of those assessments and that data collection and those teaming processes? What's a good place to start for the individual principal?
Well, I do have a few individual schools as clients, which is interesting because the way that we have started with them is, what do you have to do to satisfy the district requirements? Hmm. Because whether they want to or not, they have to operate as part of the district. So, you know, let's get it down to the very basic of district requirements, and then you have to meet those, and then how can we work a system that is student empowers teachers and increases student performance? How can we put that into place around that district? So it's kind of a backward way, but we've been very successful. One of the schools is a Chicago Public School elementary school, and they have really been able to create a student focused system while meeting district requirements.
Right, and I think in districts where there's not any big concerted effort going on, for an individual school to have a well-organized plan to do something good, I think is usually pretty well received. And I think as principals, we get pretty good at that game of, you know, here are the 18,000 things we're required to do by the district, and you know, we have to kind of match those up with what we're doing as a school, and kind of make that manageable, and put it together in a way that allows it to be coherent and doable at the school level. But I think it's good to see that that fit emerge. And I can't tell you how many different plans I have done as a principal, and I hear from from principals who are in larger districts than I worked in, or smaller districts where they wear more hats. You know, the amount of planning that we do, and the number of different plans that we have to do in a given year, from safety to student growth to staff growth to personal growth and so forth. The more that those can be aligned and can be working toward the same purposes, I think that can save us an enormous amount of time and can really really allow us to focus on our big priorities there.
I agree. And a couple of things on that point is, one is with the teacher and principal evaluation systems, all of the data that is collected through the Miller Guidance System is across the system. So we use the same data that we use to look at individual student performance. We use that same data to look at grade level performance, same data to look at school performance and district performance. So it lends itself perfectly to goal setting at the district level. One thing we saw here in Illinois was that, and this was pretty much across the districts that I worked with, is that our universal screening data in reading, we would make progress from fall to winter, but from winter to spring, there was a dip. And this occurred at all grade levels. And we were able, at the district level with principals, to evaluate that and set goals to how to keep that growth going from winter to spring, and have data to indicate that that goal was achieved. So teacher evaluation, principal evaluations naturally grow from this system because it is giving principals and teachers the tools they need to manage the needs of their students. So to be evaluated on something that you have control over is a better situation for teachers and principals. Right. There are several other places where this is streamlined, and I wanted to mention one of the things about the Miller Guidance System that I'm most proud of, and I haven't had a chance to slip this in yet, so I'm going to slip it in, but is that we have a Tier 1 or a core program monitoring system that's built into the protocols. So when we do data teams, it's not about looking at individual students and forming intervention groups only. The first half of our data teams are spent looking at program level data. There is no individual student data available, and the teachers evaluate their program and set program goals and even develop action research plans based on their program level data. So where so much of school reform and RTI in particular has been kind of pinned on this, we're going to give kids interventions. Mm-hmm. We also look at the power of the core program in affecting the progress of all students.
Right, and when you don't do that, when you don't have a strong Tier 1 program in place, the Tier 2 and the Tier 3 become so large that it's really not manageable. So that's a powerful place to start.
Right. So, and that's what I'm most proud of, the effect of that. In principals, one of our principals has made the comment that it's given him the framework he needed to be an instructional leader. And many principals want to be instructional leaders but don't have a platform for accomplishing that.
Well, Mary, if people want to find out more information about your approach and what you do with school districts, where should they look? Is that millerguidance.com?
That would be millerguidance.com.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Really appreciate your time. And it's been great talking with you and exciting to think about the possibilities for our students when we get a blueprint, when we get a plan together and all work toward the same purposes. All right. Thanks, Mary. Great talking with you. Have a great day.
Thank you. Bye.